But excited to have you on the program from TigerNet.com, as always, to talk some Clemson football. I might get nerd alerted in this segment. I was already congregating with Kwok in the lobby, and Kwok was like fully in alignment with me. He's like, why would people have a problem with that? I'm like, thank you. So I think putting Kwok and I in back-to-back time slots has been dangerous for the non-math reliant people in our building.
Oh, man. That's a tough time.
Yeah, it is. But Texter got in and asked what post-game win expectancy is. Essentially, I'm not going to get too nerd. I don't want to get yelled
Deep
at.
Deep breaths. You got this.
It's how well you played.
Do I do it? Am I allowed to nerd alert you?
You are allowed to nerd alert
me. Is that okay with upper management?
It's fine. Upper management's not going to have
nerd
an issue.
Alert!
Whoa, wait a second, Doc. You mean to tell me that this is a nerd alert?
That's right, Marty. We've entered a nerd alert.
We're stealing a nerd alert.
We have a nerd alert. For example, people want to yell at Sweeney, okay, and they want to say, well, I'm tired of hearing a few plays away. Against Duke last year, Clemson had a 97% chance of winning the game on post-game win expectancy. I'm just saying, they were the better team. Now, with that, Sam, they had a 28% post-game win expectancy against Louisville in a game that I don't think they deserve to win. So that's just kind of where you're at. It's taking net success rate and other, you know, statistics within the world of college football to assign a percentile, or a percentage, rather, for how likely you are to win the game. So Syracuse, for example, Clemson had an 8% post-game win expectancy. I think that's fair. We all watched the game. We got our tail kicked. But against Duke, that was not my takeaway in real time. It was like, oh, we blew this and we blew this bad. And that's what the analytics would indicate there. So I'm not going to bore you to death by giving you the formula and everything else. But essentially, like, you're taking 0.090 plus 0.65 plus 0.4 plus 0.75 to get 270. So you're taking like four major categories, and then you're assigning an analytical value to them. Then you're putting it in a formula, and you're getting a PGWE-derived expected wins across a certain amount of games.
We're deriving
is essentially
numbers?
Where you're at. Yeah.
I checked out
in high school.
I did.
I have the formula.
Well, Grayson, this guy did take the ACT in sixth grade, so I mean, it's not surprising.
Oh, you're a little genius over
here. No, I'm not claiming that.
What was the LSU percentage?
The LSU percentage was 30% because Clemson did not play well and they did not deserve to win.
On a serious note, though, I do know what you're saying, and I get what you're saying, and I think this is a relatively usable stat. And
For football, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the Knicks and the Spurs in a way, because you will say that the Spurs should have won that series. I will say that they shouldn't because they didn't know how to execute. The win expectancy will say that the Spurs should have won. The eyeball expectancy for me, which is what I'll call it, would say that the Spurs didn't know how to execute down the stretch, which is why you can look at a football team, and if they have like four games where they're sitting 70-75% or higher on the postgame win expectancy and they didn't win that game, at that point it becomes a trend for me. And it becomes a, you can't execute down the stretch, and you keep doing stupid stuff stat.
Okay, I agree with this. So here is how I kind of interpret it if I had to put it in tiers with percentages, okay? If you are in 90 to 100%, you dominated the game statistically.
Agreed, and you should have won.
And you should have won.
And if you didn't, you shot yourself in the foot.
Exactly. So Duke game, you give up a kick return, you give up a bomb touchdown with 10 seconds left in the half, and your whole team gets you-know-what-it up the sidelines. You're up seven with the ball in plus territory with 5 minutes left and losing regulation. Like, you're seeing where the math comes into this. That was highly statistically improbable. Georgia Tech, you're at 61%. The next tier, I would put 70 to 89%, which is clearly superior underlying performance, but there's some deviation with how you play to where you leave the door open. And then I would put 55 to 69%, modestly better performance. You're going to get a wide
probably
range
a
of results.
Up.
It's probably a toss-up. 45 to 55%, I would say toss-up. Yep. 20 to 44%, if you win, you're winning or you're nearly winning despite being outplayed statistically, and 0 to 19%, highly improbable result or stolen victory if you win. So that's my nerd alert of the day with post-game win expectancy.
Wow.
I don't think it should be used as the end-all be-all, but it is easier to process for how well you played looking back on things. And when you're looking at the end of the season, I think that there is a vast difference if you're looking at a team that is consistently winning football games and the 75% and up when it comes to post-win game expectancy, or if you're looking at a team like a BYU last year who was maybe dancing through the flames a little bit, where it's like, There's a couple in here that they won where we're looking at the data, and it probably they shouldn't have won the football game. Those are the teams that I always have the antenna up going into the college football playoff picture where it's like they've been dancing through the fire and they didn't deserve to win a lot of these games. Their comeuppance is coming.
And that happened in the Big 12 championship.
And that happened in the Big 12 championship.
Yeah. I know. I think they had their backup quarterback in, if I'm not mistaken. But still, I think they had the two losses to Texas Tech that were – an unbelievable margin.
I don't think it's the end-all be-all, but like I do think it's a good resume tool, especially at the end of the year where you can put the whole set of sample size in front of you and say, how dominant were you? And did you deserve to get to that record that you're at?
Well, here's what I would say, and I would use Clemson as the example to match it, and I do think this eye test matches. In the LSU game, they're PG.
Yeah, post-game.
We're just going to call it. It was 30%. That matches the eye test. They weren't dominated in that game because LSU struggled.
Yeah.
But they were lucky to get a call in the end zone that didn't end up being a touchdown. They were lucky to be in that game, I think,
you,
at the end.
You were up 10-3. You had a chance to go up two scores.
They did not deserve.
Hoosier missed the field goal, and it was all downhill from there.
They did not deserve
to win
that game.
You got dominated the second half.
Yeah, exactly. Second half was a butt-kicking.
They did not deserve to win that game. The Troy game, 87% win percentage. Leaves a little room for Troy to get frisky, but Clemson overall dominated the second half. The Georgia Tech loss, they were given a 61% chance to win that game.
I think you dominated the middle two quarters and you left a lot of food on the plate.
Your receivers catch a football, you probably win that game.
Yep.
Georgia Tech doesn't kick a 56-yard field goal on a fire drill, which credit to them, credit to Aiden Barr for that, but that doesn't happen too often.
Yep.
I think that number matches up. Wiped in the Syracuse game. Your win percentage was 8%. I'm surprised it's even that high.
Deserved loss.
North Carolina, BC, both 95+. Matches the eye test. SMU game, you had a 58% chance to win by this number. I think that matches the eye test. Their defense was atrocious down the stretch in that game. Absolutely atrocious.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's fair because you were down 29-24. You had a chance to get the ball back on fourth down, and your offense played well, especially in the second half, and they really struggled in the first half. Clemson's defense played much better than people realized in the first half of that game. The problem was your offense had seven straight drives in which they didn't put points on the board.
The one that will stand out is the Duke game because it was a 97% post-game win expectancy. I mean, I watched this game. I don't know how Clemson lost it.
Yeah, special teams touchdown on a kickoff return. You're up. It's second and four at the plus 44-yard line, and Adam Randall's averaging 6 yards a carry, and Garrett Riley went pass, punt.
And then on the other side of that, you can do the exact same thing for the Louisville game.
You shouldn't have won that game.
Louisville game. That was a Friday night game,
right?
There's
two field goals in the final, 5 minutes of that game that were not like 50-yard bombs. Those were pretty
Clemson did nothing to win that football game. Louisville did everything to throw that football game away and vomit all over the field. Those two games, to me, cancel out.
Clemson also had a few goal line stuffs, if I can recall. They tried to get cute.
Yeah.
And the goal line, I think it was on their own side, and Louisville stuffed it twice, and it was just a mess.
And to Sam's point, before we throw it to Grayson and let him like do his job in this segment and talk a little Clemson football, sorry, you walked into a hornet's
nest. I like the nerd out. I'm all here for it.
Sam is correct by saying, and like Texter gets in and saying like it's stat slop. I disagree. I think it's a very good way to gauge a team and what was a deserved result versus what was an actual result. I don't get attached to the results. I don't get attached to winning and losing. Winning and losing doesn't matter to me. It's about the process. Because if you're actual championship quality, your process will be good enough to where you can get to that point. Sometimes the ball's not going to go in the hoop in basketball. Sometimes your situational stuff sucks. And this is where Sam's point is correct. Because if the Spurs just had marginally better situational execution in the NBA Finals, they easily would have won the Finals. Because for 46 minutes of every game, they were the vastly better team. This is the problem with Clemson the last couple years and the problem with this stat at its core. How many mind-numbing mistakes has Clemson made in situational football context in the last 5 years? It's a lot. It's Maffa on the goal line in Durham. It's Cade spacing out in the Orange Bowl and running the ball. Cade did the same thing against UNC a couple years ago and just got away with it. We're talking about goal line. What about Austin, Texas in the playoff game where instead of sneaking it, Garrett Riley wants to give it to Keith Adams for no reason, right? It's stuff like this that goes into winning and losing football games where I deviate from the stat as a barometer for success. So I think it's a good general stat to use to determine how well you played, right? Between the 20 specifically, but when it gets to the nitty-gritty, where it's like, your quarterback's got to make a big-time throw on a big-time third or fourth down, or goal-line defense or goal-line offense, red-zone offense, that's where this doesn't do a great job of encapsulating the context of the game. And in football, I'm more than willing to admit, that's where a lot of games are won and lost on the margins if your success rate is right there at the 50% line. So that's where I would say it does not do a great job of accounting for situational context, Sam. And then the turnover element in this thing is also a big-time thing that sways it drastically.
You hit us with the Roman Harper. I don't care about wins and losses.
I don't care about winning and losing. Winning and losing is not the ultimate goal of your season. Your ultimate goal of your season should be to get better and better and better. And if you're scamming wins, it's not sustainable. You want to build a sustainable product that can win in the postseason. That is my goal as a fan. That would be my goal as a coach every season. I want to look the part and get the result so I can feel confident in my football team. If Clemson went 11-1 with 11 Louisvilles last year, I'd be irate because we had zero chance to win a national championship skating by the skin of our teeth like that. You know what I mean? I think the logic's fair when you view it like that.
It's if that 2022 team a few years ago found a way in the playoffs. Just one going to happen. Gracious.
Reminds me of TCU. I think of TCU. Yeah. I think of the TCU playoff team where it felt like they could have lost 8 times during the year, but at some point it hit the
any Notre Dame team.
Yeah, a lot of them. It just hit the point where it's like, yeah, but they don't. They just keep winning. They don't lose, though. Even if the process is funky to get there, they just keep on finding ways to win. That kind of, I would love to see what their expectancy was that year, but I like to win. I like the process, but I also like winning. I don't care if they win 3-0 if they need to win that week.
That's fair.
But I do get your overall point.
I think Clemson fans wouldn't mind 11 Louisvilles if they win all 11 Louisvilles.
11, yeah.
Getting into 2026.
I'd be calling it exactly how it is if we won a bunch of games like that. We got bailed. But Grayson, let's talk a little Clemson football. We're up at ACC kickoff. Give me your main takeaways from that whole event and all the festivities.
Yeah, you know what was interesting? And I was, besides taking down Faxon and CFP 27, 49-43. Just thought I'd reiterate that.
That's why I'm picking against Sagapula Taylor.
Wow.
Happy one week anniversary, by the way.
Disrespectful.
Bum.
Triumphant victory. Yeah, one of my goals this year is when we sat here last year and we sat in Radio Row and we're talking about Clemson in 2025, it was how far can they climb in that national championship bubble? It felt like they were one of the few teams on paper that people were comfortable picking to win. And so this year, my goal was how much has that changed? And it's been pretty drastic, of course, given you go 7-6 in a year where you had championship expectations. So just talking to various personalities, talking to various people, whether it's Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, a bunch of different schools, that I just pulled aside and was like, hey, can I ask you a few questions about Clemson? And I'd love your honest, unbridled opinion. Just we're going to make it anonymous. And a lot of it was an unknown. And I think that's really fascinating where there's not a direct opinion or there's not a consensus where there's a camp that thinks Clemson will be just as good as they were last year. And there's a camp that thinks the Chad Morris hire is a lot more, I think they expect a lot more out of Chad Morris than maybe some other people think in certain camps. So it's a team that when I asked central questions, it was a Chad Morris question. It was, what will Clemson do in your eyes if they're going to be good? What's going to happen if they're going to be bad? How does it all go down? And then where are you going to place them in your ACC poll? And the consistent number was about the 4-7 range. Was they don't expect them to win the ACC. I don't think anyone was picking them over Miami. They shouldn't. But it's this middle of the pack where they could be better, but it wouldn't shock them if they're 7-5 again.
It'll be interesting to see how it all works out. I've never seen the perception this skewed on Clemson, meaning the range of opinions is broad. And that was one of my takeaways from Charlotte, too, where there were a couple folks that I talked to. For example, I'll just go ahead and say it. SMU's representative thinks we're beating LSU. All of SMU's people have a lot of respect for Clemson. They think we're going to be a really good football team and right back in the picture again. And one of the SMU people went as far as me as saying, see you in Charlotte. So
interesting.
That just goes to show different programs have different perceptions and different respect levels for this team headed into the upcoming campaign. I'm interested to see how everything works out throughout the course of that process and season with the Tigers and to see where things stack up for Clemson as we head towards postseason play and more, and if Clemson's a part of that conversation.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't even talk about postseason, which is strange to me, where the word association, you're always picking Clemson to finish first or second. I went back and there was a little booklet of all the final order of finish votes that you had, and Clemson was one or two, whether it was in the division era or in this 18 slog of a conference where Clemson hasn't been picked to at least not be represented in Charlotte. So it'll be one of the – I'm looking forward to seeing the ACC order of finish release in a few days, and I would expect Clemson to be anywhere from 4 to maybe even 7 or 8.
Where did you vote Clemson before we take a break?
I had him at 4th.
Okay. I voted him 3rd, so I'm always interested to hear the perspective. I think 4th is probably the most common place behind Miami, SMU, Louisville, and in that order, based off of what I heard. I flip-flopped Clemson and Louisville because I think Brohm's going to Brohm it up against a couple opponents.
Yeah.
And I don't trust their first-year starter as a guaranteed thing in Keenholz, even if I'm high on him in comparison to most.
It's just, it's a lot better than Miller Moss.
It is a lot better than Miller. Man, amen to that. I mean, if there was any validation that I needed, that kid sucks.
That kid sucks out loud. That's a big reason why Clemson won that game. Miller Moss was terrible.
I was just my kumbaya of QB eval. Noodle arm Miller rolling it out there last year.
That might be the worst quarterback performance I've seen.
He was awful.
He was terrible.
He's not quite as physically imposing as Shuck, because Tyler Shuck's like 6'5",
225.
Saints going to win the division, by the way.
Yeah.
I think Shuck is a lot better than pre-draft Sam gave him credit for, and I'll eat my words on that one. I was probably wrong there, and that's perfectly fine with that.
He's old, also, so I'm going to give you a little bit of...
It's 26. Well, it's also early.
He's supposed to be good. He's like 27 years old already.
I mean, everyone's crowning Jackson Dart. I still think Jackson Dart stinks. But
I agree.
We're gonna learn if Sam's an idiot there in a couple months. Can I sell you on Keenholz as like a diet Shuck in the Brohm system from the perspective of...
That should be good enough for them,
Purdue,
though,
too. Brohm had pocket passing statues. Aiden O'Connell, who should never have made it to the NFL, but Jeff Brohm made that happen. And credit to AOC for that. Aiden O'Connell, pocket passing statue. Jack Plummer, pretty much a pocket passing statue, and then they got a little bit more improv out of him. I don't know how he turned him into a usable player at Louisville either. David Blau was... not overly mobile either, turned into an NFL quarterback. Now he's an OC at like 29. Miller Moss, not overly mobile either. Didn't really do anything well, to be honest with you, but fit that pocket passing mold a little bit more. The only outlier in the last half decade or so, and maybe 3 or 4 more years extended on that to get back to the Blau tenure, is Tyler Shuck. Because Tyler Shuck could move with a big body type, and that's something that they don't usually have in a Jeff Brohm system. Keenholz, while he's not 6'5", 6'2", and he's stocky. He's built, and he's a runner first for Ohio State. He was used in running packages last year and has a good arm. Can I sell you a little bit on like a diet Shuck development track?
I like Lincoln Keenholz. I think he's going to be a good player. I've got Louisville with like 9 wins.
Yeah,
I think they're going to be a good team.
They have a really good roster, favorable schedule.
Two really good backs, which is going to make his life a lot easier. Now, I will say this, Sam, and we got to take a break. In an ideal world for everyone involved in Louisville this year, it's like 35% of their plays are passing plays, which is going to be it. Like, they need to feed those two backs and ride them until the wheels fall off. And then Keenholz has legs too. So how can we incorporate his legs into that? I think they could be a really dynamic power. Like, I'm thinking like a run and shoot team is what I'm thinking with Brohm this year. Like, play action, a lot of unique concepts to get both backs on the field and involved. And then, like you're saying, diet Shuck, maybe a little bit more leg heavy than Shuck, but I could see a similar development trajectory for him. I like Keenholz. I think he's going to be a good player.
Wouldn't be shocked if you're seeing like 2,500 total yards on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Of season.
It needs to be. Both backs need 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
Simple.
That's the magic number, I think, for them.
Both. There's also, I'm not sure, I don't believe they're to be on this roster because we know nothing about their receiver core because pretty much all of it's gone. There's no Chris Bell on this team. There were multiple games last year that Chris Bell won them on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember I hosted Mickey's show after one of their games and I talked to Roy Philpott about it and he just said, Chris Bell took everybody's eyes off of every other player on the field.
Yeah.
And there is not a Chris Bell on this roster this year for them. So the pass game figures to take a step back in that regard.
Is Colin
Lacey
back? I want to say he's gone too, right?
Lacey graduated. Yeah. Kari Collins graduated.
So it's brand new pass catchers up and down in Louisville this year.
It is an entirely new group. They brought in a Vandy transfer and Trey Richardson, who was really good last year. Maybe he can be their Chris Bell.
Player.
He had 800 yards and 7 touchdowns. Yeah. LaWayne McCoy came from Florida State, obviously a pretty highly touted recruit. It's not like it's devoid of talent entirely, but are any of those guys Bell?
Probably
Bell
not.
Bell would have been a late first, early second round pick, I think, before he blew his knee out.
For sure. All right, quick break here on the program. More coming up with Grayson Mann from Tiger Net on the other side.
From the first kickoff in Death Valley to the final pitch in Doug Kingsmore, we're your flagship station for Clemson athletics all year long. The Clemson Athletic Network lives right here on the Roar.
Dexter 5-8-9. Jed gets in and says, Faxon, did you try and get Coach Brownell or someone on from the basketball team before they take the Italy trip later this week? I kind of hinted at it. I've been at practice all week. I got to be at practice again today. We've got some media availability. They've got a lot going on. They've got a lot going on right now, Grayson. And we're going to have extensive coverage. Kwok's getting to go. I think Ben gets to go to Italy, too. Or is it just Kwok? Okay, so just
Kwok. I'm not gonna spoil what I'm sure Kwok will announce. We're gonna have you covered, Jed.
Yeah, Jed, you're gonna get your fix in and more than enough. Just trust me on this one. So patience, right? Let's have a little patience, and it will be more than I could provide you with what Kwok will have for you content wise in Italy. Let's leave it at that, and let Kwok kind of break the news there. But are you going to this media thing later at Clemson?
Yeah, I am. I am.
Okay.
I'll be there around. I don't think I'm catching the women's basketball availability. Just I have a few things to do back home, but I will be there for Brad at 3.
Oh, so Sean Poppy's not important enough to you to show up?
You know that's not
true.
You're
not all in. You're not all in. No, I'm just trolling. Take care of what's got to be taken care of at the crib.
What's the LeBron thing? Anybody on that? Not you? Not you?
Not you. Anybody but you. Anybody but you could say that, but not you. No, in all seriousness, Grayson's done a great job with TigerNet covering men's and women's basketball the last couple of years. Women's basketball media room, game one at Clemson was me and Sean Poppy. Now, and then for the majority of the first season, it was me, Grayson, and Sean Poppy.
It was a tight group, though.
Now, there's a lot of people there for women's basketball, which I'm very proud and appreciative of. So we've been able to recruit a little
mini
army.
Winning is a heck of a drug, right?
Winning is a heck of a drug. And I told everybody it was coming. It's coming again, once again, this year for the Tigers. I got another really good team and waiting on some waivers. But Grayson, let's get into some Clemson football talk. 6-5-4 Roar. Texter says, how is SMU picked over Clemson? Quarterback, same for Louisville. SMU's quarterback is the second best in the conference, in my opinion, in Kevin Jennings. They have a really good offensive line. They have a really good receiving core. And they have a really good coach. SMU is 14-2 since joining the ACC in regular season conference games. The losses are by a combined 4 points. They both came towards the tail end of last year. And one of them was a West Coast travel loss in the last week of the season, which cost them a college football playoff appearance, which I think they deserved last year. So that's kind of where we're at as of right now. SMU's better than Clemson on paper. They have a better quarterback. They have a better team. They have a better roster. And I don't think that that means that Clemson can't be better with the S-tier outcome for our season. But right now, SMU deserves that cred and bump of credibility. Clemson lost more league games last year than SMU's lost since joining the conference.
Whew. That's a stat for you right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, SMU deserves the benefit of the doubt here. And no one's going to pick them over Miami. I mean, Miami's a super team at this point with Darian Mensah under center. I've been saying that for months. But SMU, you just have the better quarterback. You got a little bit more certainty there.
We have breaking Boston Celtics news. I'm sorry.
Oh, I talked to Sam about it. Yeah.
Okay, you did. You got this Jordan Walsh's extension. Okay, continue on SMU.
Hey, bald Sam. Bald.
Indeed he is.
But yeah, SMU, there's just a little bit more certainty. I would say the same thing with Louisville. Just I would say roster-wise, you just have a few more proven commodities there, even though they share similar characteristics with the quarterback, where Louisville's got a new guy. Clemson's going to have somebody. We don't know exactly who yet. But Louisville, a little bit of, I think Louisville's got a little bit of an easier schedule, if I'm not mistaken, no?
They do. They have a little bit of an easier schedule for sure. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in. Texter says, we also actually lost more home games last year than SMU has since they joined the conference, which is crazy to think about. Yeah. Oh, man.
The 2025 season is going to be the where were you? The where were you?
Yeah. Texter gets in and says, how many good wins for SMU in the last 2 years? I'd have to go back down memory lane, to be honest with you. I don't have too much recollection as to what their schedule entailed in each of the last 2 years. I don't think it was immensely difficult in either of the last two seasons. I want to say in that first year that they went undefeated in the league, they had a couple pretty big wins, if I'm not mistaken. You pull up the first year for them.
They beat Miami last year.
Yeah, they did beat Miami last year. That's right. And Miami went to the national championship
SMU
game.
SMU beat Miami last year.
They beat Louisville. They beat the crap out of Louisville last year. They beat Louisville 38-6 last year.
Year one, they didn't exactly have any extremely impressive wins, but they scored 66 on TCU, which 66 against a power team is always impressive. They beat Louisville and Jeff Brohm that year. They beat, I guess, Pitt and Duke. They didn't. The schedule thing was a big debate in 2024 with SMU, but it was the Indiana question of the same year of, we beat everybody we played. What more can you ask for from us? And then they got waxed in the playoff by Penn State, and obviously in the ACC championship game, Clemson got them. But last year, funnily enough, last year they had better wins than they had the year before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Clemson win on the road, even though Clemson was bad last year, is still an impressive win. The Miami win is extremely impressive and got even more impressive as the year went on. Like you said, they obliterated Louisville and they won their bowl game. Yep. So they had better wins. The problem is they lost to Baylor in double overtime to open the year. They lost to TCU after scoring 66 on them the year before, and Jake Dickert held them to 12 points.
Body bag.
Shout out Jake.
Body
shout
bag. Out
Jake. Client.
That's body bag. Guy right there.
Yep. So to answer the question, they had some good ranked wins last year. They didn't really have any the year before, but they didn't have any bad losses the year before, and they had bad losses last year. So you combine those two seasons, you got a great year.
Lowest regular season point total for SMU of the Rhett Lashley tenure.
Yeah, they got a really easy schedule when you look at it.
Body bagged.
They don't have to go to Cal. They got Virginia at home. The toughest one might be Louisville on the road. Like, I don't think SMU is going to lose to Florida State in the opener. Notre Dame later in the year, but that's maybe your one or two losses. You're going to be in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So.
SMU is a good football team. Clemson, let's talk a little football. Quarterback, let's talk a little quarterback. There's been a lot of just steam and smoke.
Sure.
And people are hearing different things. People are talking about different things. Vezina Reynolds, nothing's changed at this point in the calendar.
No.
Okay.
I would say, and I'm sure this will come up once we get to fall camp and anyone and everyone will field the question of Vezina Reynolds. I would say if I had to put money on it right now, and not endorsing that or anything, but I would say if you had to make a selection for who's the most likely to start week one, it would be Vezina. But Tate Reynolds is coming. That's someone that's going to play at some point, if I had to guess. Now, that's not to say Vezina will get benched, but I think the Reynolds' athletic gifts, you can put him in certain packages. There's going to be a moment for him to go out there and showcase what he's got. But right now, I think Vezina hasn't done anything to lose the job, and I think that's going to remain the case throughout fall camp.
Can I ask you, and this is just your opinion question,
because sure.
Fax and I did it yesterday. South Carolina's on November 28th. Who is starting at quarterback for Clemson in that game as of July 23rd, in your mind?
I think it'll be Tate Reynolds.
That's what I said. We were on opposite sides of the coin. I said Tate.
I think at some point, and whether it's with the LSU game or Miami game, Clemson's flaws are going to get exposed to a better team. And I think it's going to be more about the Miami game than the LSU game. Personally, I think LSU's – I'm not buying the 11.5 line, and I won't ever heading into that September game. But at some point, they're going to, I think, ask themselves about a quarterback that can do a little bit more with the football, and that's not to knock Vezina for what he's doing. And there's an avenue that I can see where he's the ultimate point guard in a Chad Morris offense, and Clemson wins a lot of games because of that. But at the same time, I think that Reynolds, there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of steam behind what he could do. And if he's starting against South Carolina in November, it would not surprise me in the slightest.
I'm interested to see how that pans out. We also played another exercise on the program yesterday. What week will Tate Reynolds start? And we talked about the post-bye. Sam has Clemson at 2-3 with a benching. Where are you at after five games?
I would say it would obviously depend on the record if Clemson were to make a move. Right now, I would expect Clemson, that Cal game is going to be pure survival. If there's a game that should strike fear into Clemson fans the most, it's not LSU and it's not Miami. It's that Friday night weird scheduling game in Cal where you got to travel across the country on a short week and play a quarterback in JKS. Now, he might have not performed well for you, Faxon, in CFP game, but he is pretty good at what he does. And I would
say, can we get a BS fumble six for the loss in overtime like we did up in Charlotte, where he just falls backwards with a wide open receiver?
He really did cough it up
for a touchdown.
You.
He plays with half the one eye closed to mimic half the screen being covered. That was the excuse, I believe.
Shout out to Darian Rencher and James Franklin.
Grayson will vouch for this.
We got mobbed.
That wasn't really an excuse. There was like some legitimate.
No, there was. I got lucky because I mean, I was kind of
Grayson
cramped.
Picked the right side,
but I picked the right side of the couch because halfway we have James Franklin walk over and the Virginia Tech entourage of people, and they're just basically sitting on the two of us while we're playing. And it's like, can we, like, do we mind? And I know obviously the interview takes precedent, of course, but it was just, they just occupied the space. It was just kind of a weird spot to have it.
G Money, let me ask you a question here about the run game.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of what we talked about yesterday and a lot of what the quarterback room looks like in general is going to be dependent on the run game. from a split perspective right now, a month out, where do you see Clemson going week one usage-wise with this group of guys? Is it a true committee thing, or are they going to give Davidson an opportunity to bell cow this?
I think Clemson needs Davidson to be the bell cow back, because I'm not sure Johnson is, for as exciting as that 4-2, 4-speed is, he's still not big enough in my eyes to be in between the tackles back, where you're having him read sort of certain gaps and making plays there. I think Johnson's role is getting the ball out to him in space, trying to figure out ways to maybe run him off the tackle and see if you can get creative there. Davidson needs to touch the ball. I think for Clemson to be successful, you need to have him touch the ball 15 to 20 times a night. And I think Clemson's going to run the ball heavily, as Chad Morris has implied. I know the previous OC said that as well, and it didn't happen. But I think with Chad Morris, you're going to have a little bit more of a balanced attack. And with a younger quarterback, you got to run the football. You got to be ahead of the sticks. And especially with an inexperienced offensive line, it wouldn't shock me if Clemson's going to try to run the football maybe 20 to 30 times a night and really maintain that balance that it didn't have really at all during Riley's administration.
Texter gets in and says, hey guys, let's remember that CV only started one game last year and threw for three touchdowns. I think we as Clemson fans have to be careful that we're not doing the incoming freshman hopeful syndrome that we all turned out to be true with Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence and did not with DJ or Cade Leonard. I think that's very important.
That's fair.
I think putting the pressure on a young man that did not play a snap of high school football as a senior to be the savior of this program where jobs are on the line and livelihoods are on the line is doing him a disservice. And I think that the best outcome for this football team this year is Christopher Vezina is a lot better than everyone, myself included, anticipates, and he rides it to a 10-win season and you go to the playoff. I think that is the best outcome for Clemson. Now, if it does hit the fan, like Sam thinks is going to happen, which, again, you're going to be a double-digit underdog in probably two of those games and a marginal favorite in another one. A lot stranger things have happened in this crazy world of college football than a 2-3 start in two games you're an underdog in. Then at that point, yeah, conversations need to be had. And I don't know what more you gain from starting Christopher Vezina at that point if you are 2-3 after five games. So I can see both sides of it. I think where we're all kind of in unanimous agreement is that Tate Reynolds should not be thrown out there as the starting quarterback snap one, game one in Baton Rouge. Now, here is where I will say something that I have not said this whole offseason. 6'5", 4", roar is the number. I think Tate Reynolds should get some snaps in Baton Rouge. And I'm never a two quarterback guy. I don't think having that in the chamber is a bad thing. I don't. So that's kind of where my standing is right now. I don't know. I believe in CV more than the average Clemson fan by a lot. I think CV's better than the average Clemson fan does by a lot. I don't think we need to ignore an option that could win us football games if push comes to shove in BR and you're down 7 points and you need a little bit of a spark.
Yeah, I'll say this to that texter and two things on that front. I think that, and I wasn't here, and I was a little too young to be in the weeds for the quarterback battles, quote-unquote, between the Watson and Stout and, of course, Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. I think that there's a world where if Reynolds, and he was on campus for a very short time, and I think it's significant that the door wasn't shut entirely on Reynolds starting week one in the spring, because there could have easily been, I think you could have seen it, and they clearly have seen enough to justify, okay, he's much better than 3, 4, and 5 by a wide margin to give him the opportunity to start. That's still open for discussion, and he was also limited in the spring, so a 75% version of Reynolds was able to do enough to justify challenging for the job in week one. There's a world where maybe Reynolds, and I think the way the coaching staff has described it to us, whether it's in media sessions and stuff like that, that it's wide open and it's not more of a battle just for the sake of it being a battle. There's a real chance that kid starts week one, and I don't think there's a world where maybe you're worried about him maybe losing confidence or being spooked. I would say, though, I think maybe there's a world where Reynolds is better, but the better option for the team is to start Vezina week one and to roll him out there. You have that start under his belt. You've had the experience there, and you go from there. But I would imagine that leash is going to be pretty tight.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Do you think if they flipped the schedule and Charleston Southern was your opponent week one, yeah, and you played Virginia Tech down and then put LSU to Miami at the bottom of it, they'd start Tate?
That's a really good question, actually. I think that maybe the door is a little bit wider for Reynolds at that point, because you got to look at the risk there of you're not as worried about starting a true freshman against Charleston Southern than you are in Baton Rouge. Maybe it's different, too, if LSU's coming here. I truly don't know. there. That's an interesting hypothetical to attack it from, but Mike Money would still be on Vezina starting week one, and we'll see how the chips fall from there, not to be a cliche-laden way to end that phrase there, but I do think CV's your starter week one. It wouldn't shock me if Reynolds pushes at some point and he's your full-time starter.
All right, Grayson, on that note, plug your stuff and we'll let you get out of here. Where can we check out the folks at TigerNet at a time like this? What is it, 44 days until kickoff?
44 days
until
kickoff.
44 days until kickoff. Crazy.
I think we're 2 weeks away.
2 weeks from fall camp.
Yeah. So we got a ton of stuff over at TigerNet.com. Dave and I will be doing weekly podcasts over on YouTube. Ton of stuff to follow. Very exciting. Football season's almost here. It'll be here before we know it, so please check that out, and then you can go follow me on Twitter at great_man21 for more.
Texter says, come on, facts, and I thought CV was your man. Now you want two QBs. I'm not saying I want two QBs. I'm saying if it's push comes to shove and you need a spark, play the kid.
Yeah.
I want to win. I don't care who my friends are. I want what's best for Clemson, and that's where my opinion lies at the end of the day. Right now, I think CV starting this game is the best for Clemson. My opinion could be different based off of how he looks after one game, and I think that's how everybody should be approaching this. Give the kid a chance. If he stinks and underwhelms in week one, then we can start to open up the conversation. Quick break here on the program. Great job, Grayson. We'll catch up with you next week.
If you don't agree with one of our hosts,
you're an idiot.
Let us know on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line at 864-654-ROAR. The Roar, where every day is game day.
And it's the greatest time of year. Football season's coming up. We can put baseball to bed.
Yep.
You know, it's got a little bit left in that, but hey, football's coming up. And so I this may be a little bit of a rant, maybe a little bit of a you know, not looking for your opinions, maybe so, your input. But so this whole Pete Golden thing is like just blowing my mind. You know, everybody says money's the root of all evil. No, money's not the root of all evil. The love of money's the root of all evil. And so I'm conservative, old school football guy, played it, coached it. My son played Division One. Like I'm old school, but I agree. Like these guys need to be paid. They need a little money now. You know, do they need millions of dollars? No, but they deserve a little share of that, just a little bit. But listen to Pete Golden the other day when he's talking and he's asked a question about tampering. You know, all these guys do, he should just stop his comment at, you know, the compliance office is dealing with it. That's where he stopped it at. But no, he keeps talking. And like, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, Ole Miss, they're a law school. Ranked 124th. You think there's somebody in compliance? It's probably an Ole Miss grad. It's probably got a little bit of legal background. They're 124th. They used to be 120th, so they're getting worse. They're not getting better. And so you got a guy that's saying, "Hey, well, what are you going to do if you're going down the road 70 miles? You know, over the speed limit? You know, you're going to speed up too." Does this guy have kids? I mean, my kids, I got two kids, and I've heard the same thing. Well, this guy was doing that, so it doesn't matter. Like, what are you teaching your kids? What parent would want their kid playing for this guy? What is he telling his kids at home? Then what is – now you're going to have a kid that smacks a guy and gets a 15-yard penalty. He comes to the sideline. He goes, "Coach, he was holding me." I mean, what are you teaching – I think we're missing – we're talking about the problems with college football. We need to start talking about the character of guys that are leading these young men into the real world. That's kind of my thing. It kind of just stews me up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to disagree with any of your logic. Pete Golding doesn't have integrity. That much is clear and evident with the way that he's conducted himself in the last 6 months in college football. And – you know, his commentary was refreshing marginally on a couple of topics about hypocrisy and administration within college football, but it was overshadowed by a dark cloud over it, which is the fact that he's a sleazeball. So I'm not going to defend Pete Golding. Like, I think he sucks, and I think he's the worst, and I agree that your analogy is not necessarily the way that I would want the future generation being raised on with what his commentary was, if that makes sense. I don't have kids, so I can't speak to that, but it doesn't appear that he does either based off of the way that he's trying to speak to others.
I hope he puts them up for adoption, and I know that's ugly, but last thing I'm going to say, Pete Golden is the definition, that mentality – that's what's wrong with college sports. that mentality. Number two, he gives the deep South, the old South, we hear people from North and South and West and East, you know, he's representing the Southern states of America horribly. And so anyway, I'm like, it just blows my mind that Mississippi hires this guy. He's a clown. Like just he needs a gag order put on him. But they're 124th. They don't know what a gag order is down there. Anyway, I appreciate y'all. Y'all have a great day.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Bo. It was Bo time indeed.
He's not wrong. I mean, he's not wrong. It is the oh well, they did it to us, so we can do it to you type thing. And that logic, like we said earlier, doesn't work on the playground. It gets you yelled at by a teacher. If you want change, be the change. And I've said it before, and I get it. I get the logic of if everybody's doing it in a dog-eat-dog sport, we need to do it too. But not the way Ole Miss did it. There has been tampering forever. Recruiting has not been clean for our whole lives. He's absolutely right when he says that. And Pete Golding is 100% right.
And he's right about the athletic department thing, too, where there's a double standard that's retroactively applied to certain people in sports and isn't applied to others,
but
everything else is wrong.
But the way he did it and the way he tampered and the way he brazenly did it and then came out and defended the obviously illegal and publicly illegal and highly publicized tampering that he did, to me, is where he gets thrust into the LeBron bracket of, you don't get to say that. Anybody else but you, you don't get to tell me that. That's where he falls into that bucket. He said a couple things yesterday that I agree with about general college football stuff and where the sport is and how it is kind of broken, and it's always been broken, and people are just acknowledging it now to this level. But he's not the person I want to hear it from, and he does it to another level that most people don't get to. The Ferrelli stuff was outright ridiculous. It's not just that it happened to Clemson. If that happened to Kansas State, you would hear it from Kansas State because it's silly. The news about it and the facts about it that Dabo has laid out and that have been laid out via reporters here are silly. So I don't want to hear it from Golding, even if he's right about some other stuff. He did crack me up a couple times yesterday. Bo, that was an awesome phone call.
Yeah, it's Bo time.
That was an awesome phone call.
Texter gets in and says, I think Golding's tampering is more like driving 110 on the interstate. He's the idiot going way faster than anybody else. Wrong SEC program. That's Kirby. Around the horn. Sam, Major League Baseball. I'm not going to be here until next Monday. Who do the Braves even play?
The Orioles this weekend.
We got the Padres, the O's,
and the
Mets.
Padres today at noon. We don't have that one, obviously. And then the Orioles. And then, yeah, I don't know who they're playing next week. I haven't programmed in the system that far out, but I did put in the Orioles games today. So we'll have the Orioles for you. Faxon, I want to ask you a question this on Golding real quick. Would you rather the Golding, yeah, we did it, whatever, everybody's doing it response, or the Miami response of, yeah, you know, we just wanted Darian Mensah and felt he was a really good culture fit and it just came to us?
Oh, lie to me and make me feel a little bit better.
Okay.
That's simple for me. Lie to me.
Both of them very stupid. But there's really no good way to answer the question, I don't think.
Yeah, like, we're not dumb. We know that Miami tampered, but at least they're not like, ha-ha, here's all our money. Screw y'all.
Ah, Duke, you got Walker Egitt.
Yep.
You suck.
I mean, if I went from Mensah to Walker Egitt, maybe part of the reason, I feel so bad for Duke to this day.
No offense to Walker Egitt.
I think part of the reason I don't maybe feel as bad offense. Or as, like, I'm not as woe is me about the Ferrelli nonsense is because, like, it could have been Mensah to Egitt, dude. Like, it could be so much worse than
Walker.
A linebacker that was going to be an off-ball linebacker as a sophomore. It could be so much worse.
Faxon, we're back. NFL camp started today for many a team, and it started off well for the Panthers. Bryce Young threw a pick to Lathan Ransom on the first throw of camp, and then in more unfortunate and serious news, Nick Skorton was carted off after suffering a lower body injury. Dave Canales will update after testing there. Not what you want to hear from Carolina. Nick Skorton is a very important piece of that team, and they need that to not be serious 50 days out of the season starting. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, listen – there's a league-wide conspiracy against Bryce Young. Everything that will go wrong for the Panthers, and we're just going to have to overcome the odds again and fight it on our own, Nine. So let's defend this division crown, Nine. Let's defend it. Come on, Bryce.
Where does Bryce Young fall on the client Mount Rushmore? If Chad Morris has got the biggest head on Mount Rushmore.
I don't know. There's a lot of facts and clients nowadays. I know who's the anti-client. I know who I'm going to trial against is my own quarterback. Uno, quote unquote. We're going to war against him. That's why I'm not excited for the NFL this season.
Says Bryce is trash.
Yeah, these...
You are not welcome in Faxon's dojo, Texter 101. You are welcome in mine, though.
You can kiss my division crown. That's what you can kiss. And it might have been an 8-9 division crown, but you can't take it from him. And you
I want
take
Bryce
that
Young
from
to
Bryce
be good
Young.
Because he seems like a delight.
He's so nice.
He seems like a cheerful young man.
He's so nice. He might be a little, but he's so nice.
Well, that's okay. So am I. What was I going to say? You're going to be gone a week and a half. We're on day 24. Will LeBron James have a team when you are back on August 3rd?
No. I think LeBron's holding out to try and get AD to the Warriors. And there is
I don't see that happening.
There is an Anthony Davis trade stipulation after August 4th where it becomes very easy for him to bully his way out. I think there's a non-zero scenario, and even if it's not the Warriors, I think LeBron's trying to bully and puppet one of Kyrie or AD to wherever his destination is, and Clutch Sports is going to send the mafia to make sure it happens.
Faxon, have a tremendous vacation
Thank
at the
you.
Dentist, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be going with Ace Smiles for all my dental care, and you should do the same. Ace-Smiles.com. Sam, great job. Everybody that got in throughout the course of the week, thank y'all. Quak and Ben up next Without a Bounce. I'll see you next Monday or two Mondays from now. Thank you, everybody.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.